Okay, it's the 18th of March, and we're finished up exam number two. Now, you're going to continue to study chapter 5, right?
Yes,
because this is the stuff that you must know. You must know chapter 5 because that's important. And when you go to take the series 7, what you'll find is that these books have practice exams. They have the information in very dry format. But then the most important part of these books that you'll take out from the library or buy yourself are the practice exams. And you go over them over and over again. And there are companies that have these cram sessions where all they do is they show you the questions and then show you the answers. And that's what some people take before they take the exam. This is the chapter 6 assignment, which, dear students, looks exactly like the worksheet number 1, worksheet number 2, and the exam. So they're all in the same exact order. So please do this. It's not due until, another week and a half or so? So please do these problems. An extra? There should be some extras in the back there. I already gave out to a couple people, so. Ow! I'm still hobbling around. How are we doing? You know, everybody else is doing pretty well. We'll have a joke, yeah. We're still about down 3%. Oh, well, what the hell. But we're holding our own. Questions? Okay, now we're going to start chapter 17. But first, we need a good joke. Who's got a good joke? Yeah, I know, it's strange, isn't it? Chapter 17. But that's where we start now. Okay, but first we need a good joke. Who's got a good joke? Nobody? It's too long. Yeah, we don't want too long jokes. Sorry. Are you getting tired of the bar jokes?
No.
You don't like the bar jokes? Did I tell you about the termite that walked into the bar?
No.
This one you got to think about it. This termite walks into a bar, right? Have you heard this one before? And says, is the bartender here? Is the bartender here? He's a termite. What do termites eat? They eat wood, right? So is the bartender here? What'd you expect? Of course it was horrible. You remember that one from last semester? Because that one makes you think. Yeah, you have to think, what? Is the bartender here? What? Well, because you think, is the bartender here? Yeah, because he's asking if the bartender's here. But no, he's asking if the bar is tender. So some people don't get it. Okay. All right, so now we're going to start ratio analysis. Financial statements. And dear students, those of you who have taken accounting, please don't run for the exit. We're not going to be doing any accounting. The statements are already done for us. Relax. We're just going to be taking the data and creating ratios. Now, we've already done a little bit of ratio analysis, so some of this is going to be reviewed. In the third, between the third and the fourth edition, they pulled chapter 7 and put it at the end, chapter 17, because I guess they thought it wasn't that important. And they added a new chapter 7, which will start probably on Thursday, halfway in between. We've done the heavy work, folks. We've really done the heavy work. There's a little bit of light work to do in chapter 17, chapter 7 if you have the third edition. But wait till you get to chapter 7 and 8. It's all fluff. It really is fluff. You need to go back and study chapter 5. Make sure you can do the calculations in chapter 6. And the calculations in 17 you're going to find are actually very straightforward, very simple. Financial statements. All right, how many accounting majors? Speaking of accounting majors, here's one. Any other accountants? Okay, so you guys are going to be our subject matter experts. And we want to congratulate Andrea for winning the Student of Distinguished. What's it called? Distinguished Student of Distinction. Thank you. Extinction. Student of Extinction Award. And so let's have a little round of applause for Andrea. Congratulations. Good for you. And she's an accounting major also. So the accountants have a little bit of an edge over the rest of us because they understand this stuff. We do not have to learn how to create these statements. They're already done for us. So do we have to learn how to do a balance sheet and a new? It's already done for us, so don't worry about that. We're just going to take the numbers and play with them. And the three balance sheets will take three statements are the balance sheet, the income statement, and the cash flow statement. Wait a minute, what's the difference between the income statement and the cash? Hang on a minute. First, the balance sheet. So I'm going to pass these out now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The balance sheet, now how many people have already taken the 121 class, right? And so we did our net worth statement, our balance sheet, and we didn't do what the accountants do. We didn't do journal entries and all that. We just go do an inventory and see what we have and how much we owe and what we have. Well, that's essentially what a corporation does, but no, they have to do it according to generally accepted accounting principles. But still, it's the same idea. How much assets does the corporation have? How much debt does the corporation have? What's left over? And they don't use the term net worth. They use the term equity. That's or stockholders' equity. Any extras? Any extras back there? Okay, got an extra? Great. Okay, pass it back up. All right. So the formula... You'll hear people say assets equals liability plus equity, but that's not how we humans usually think of it. We usually say assets minus liabilities equals equity. But the reason they did that is because they used to, not so much anymore, but when this was many years ago, they would put the assets on one side and then the liabilities and the equity on the other side. And these two, you know, the bottom number here, after adding up the assets, the liabilities, and the equity, had to be the same. That's why you'll see assets equals liability plus equity. But we don't do that anymore. What we do is we put the assets, then the liabilities, and then the equity. I think it has to do with computers. So assets minus liabilities equals equity. Either way is fine with you. Now, fine with me, too. And what the accountants do is they separate in assets into either current or long-term. Current meaning a year. Long-term meaning anything greater than a year. Now, we investors and personal finance, we have another category called intermediate term, and I think it suits us better than the accountants' use of the terms current and long term, but that's how it works. Questions, thoughts? Continue. Now, okay, first, let's take a look at the hint I just gave you for Walgreen. You ever hear of Walgreen? I love their symbol, WAG. WAG. Those of you who like dogs, there's Walgreen's balance sheet. Uh-oh, what's going on here? Come on. How do you make it smaller? Okay, there you go. Now, Walgreen, for many years, was a company after my own heart. They had no long-term debt. And then 2008 and 9 came along, and interest rates fell to an unbelievably low level. And Walgreen, and Walgreen wasn't the only one. They all looked around and they said, look at darn, maybe we should use this opportunity to borrow some money and do some expansion. So they now have some long-term debt on their books. But look at the current assets. The current assets are what, some, as we'll see, yes?
I didn't get that.
Oh, it's on the handout I just passed out. Oh, you didn't get it? You didn't get the? Okay. Maybe you wind up with two of the same one. Yeah, second page. Don't worry about those. Just look at the second page. Okay, there you go. All right, so look, many people will, as we'll see some of the, hello, get a little bigger. They concentrate on the current assets and the current liabilities, and we'll see why later on. But most of these should be fairly easy to understand. Cash and cash equivalents. What are accounts receivable. What are net receivables? What is owed to you? Accounts receivable. And look at the bottom. What are accounts payable? What you owe to your customers. And these are things that are done, have to be done within a year. Now, normally accounts receivable is done within 30 days, 60 days, accounts payable. Inventory, what's in the store? It's self-explanatory, other current interest, assets, long-term investments, property, plant, and equipment, and goodwill. What is goodwill? Goodwill. It's a tough one to explain. It means what is the company worth above and beyond what its assets are on the books because of the name Walgreen. What are, now there's an accounting methodology to compute it. How do you put a number on that? But the fact that Walgreen is a big company that's a very big brand name, people love it or hate it or whatever, means that they have Wait a minute. Is this really 2,410,000? You have to add three zeros to the numbers. So it's actually 2.4 billion. And then other assets. So their total assets are $35,481,000,000. This is a company that's very large, right? Now we take a look. Come on, sweetheart, move down. That's very good. We look at their current liabilities. And they have accounts payable and other short-term debt that's coming due. Long-term debt of $4.4 billion, other liabilities, deferred long-term liability charges. And their total debt is $16 billion. You take the $35.5 billion minus the $16 billion, and their equity is the $19 billion. Make sense? Straightforward? Now, some of the numbers you might go, what are they? Well, don't worry about them. If you're really interested, you can go look it up. It's not that important, but it is important for us to know the big numbers as investors. The income statement. This is the income minus the expenses, which gives us the net income. So let's take a look at the Walgreens income statement now. Hello? Okay, thank you. I'm going to the wrong place. What is going on here? Why aren't you moving? Okay, there you go. Okay, so here's the income statement. Let's make it a little bit smaller. So total revenue, sometimes called the top line number, for Walgreen for the year 2013, ending August 31st, $72 billion came through the door. But is that what they made? No. First thing I do is they got to pay for all the goods that they sold. Cost of goods sold, cost of revenue, sometimes it's called, cost of revenue. So I like COGS, cost of goods sold. You like that, COGS? You accountants, COGS. And so they didn't make the Pampers, they didn't make the drugs, they didn't make the milk, the film formula. So that cost them $51 billion, so their gross profit is $21 billion. Then, remember I asked you in the Chapter 5 assignment what SG&O means? Because in the earnings call, you'll hear the CEO and the CAO say SG&O was, and what the hell is SG&O? And you try to look it up, and you can't find it. Some of you found some really interesting things, but that's what it is right there: selling, general, and administrative costs. In other words, yes.
Never mind. I thought it was
SA&O. Sometimes SA&O, SG&O, SA&O, yeah. I know. That's why I put it down there. Because when you're listening to these people, they use these buzzwords that you're supposed to understand, and many people don't understand them, so they just turn it off, and they go, I'm not going to listen to the guy. But you still should listen! And more of them are women. Have you noticed that?
No?
More and more of the CEOs of Fortune 500 companies are women. And so that's good. Who's the leader of GM now, do you know? It's a woman. A woman is leading General Motors, one of the largest car companies in the world. I'm proud of that fact. I hope she does well. I don't know. I wouldn't buy a GM car. But I'm proud of the fact that she's in charge. So here are the operating income. So you take out the... So this is the rent. This is paying the employees. This is all the other things you have to pay, not just the stuff that you sold. And then here are these little operating expenses, such as... how much we had to pay in interest and income tax. And now we're down to net income from continuing operations and then recurring, non-recurring events, one type of events, none of them. And then finally we get to the bottom of the income statement, and that is the net profit. So that's the bottom line. So you hear people say the top line and the bottom line. How much money came through the door, but what is it that you actually made on that money? But this is what we report to the IRS, right? This is what we report to the IRS. So, you got the Baftika. Okay. So, some income and expenses are not always received or paid for in cash, and that is why we have the statement of cash flows or the cash flow statement. And what you see when we take a look at the cash flow, why aren't you moving there? I hate Microsoft. I'm becoming to the point where I really hate Microsoft. I used to just hate Microsoft, but now I really hate Microsoft. You know they're not going to be working with XP anymore. If they think I'm upgrading, they're out of their minds. If they think I'm buying another machine just because they won't do that, they're out of their minds. So where do we start? Notice, we start where the income statement ended. This was the $2,450,000,000 of net income, and what do? The first thing we do is add back in the depreciation. Because Walgreens didn't write a check out for $1.283 billion to somebody for depreciation. They were allowed by the IRS accounting rules to reduce their income by $1.283 billion, and that allowed them to pay fewer taxes. You understand? Okay. Right? Well, it's not a loophole. In reality, the depreciation is something you did pay for, but you bought the plant. You paid $100 million for that plant. Right, and the IRS does not allow you to take the whole expense in 1 year. They say, look, that plant is going to be good for 30 years. So you've got to take $3 million away from your income over the next 30 years. So in a way, you did write a check when you bought the $100 million plant and equipment, but you're not writing it $3 million every year, but the IRS allows you to take $3 million. It's called depreciation. Make sense? And this is where the accountants have one up on over us mere mortals. I mean, I took accounting. I did okay. In fact, I got A's. But after I left that class, I said, I ain't never doing that for a living. Unless somebody pulls a big pile of $20 bills in front of me, preferably hundreds, I ain't doing that for a living, because I just thought, oh man, And I remember hearing about one guy, poor slob, who spent 6 weeks during one summer trying to figure out where $1.35 was. That was his job. They get paid well, but I don't care. It's not worth it. You know what I mean? I would have just said, here's $1.35. Put it in the pot and be done with it. No, you don't understand. That's not how we work. Of course, you work for the government. You know, it's $135 million. Yeah, I was going to worry about it.
How much does an accountant a year?
Like, how much does an accountant start with? I don't know. I haven't checked lately, but it used to be 40, 40, 50. Is it more than that now? No. Start? Well, that's a CPA, once you've been in the business a few years, can rise to 120. But that's not what you're going to start at. No. Yeah, 40, 50,000. Huh, it's not bad. I think some places you're not going to make mid-40s to start. But with an associate's degree, you could get, I think you could, Gerardo's smiling. What do you think? With an associate's degree? With a bachelor's degree. With an associate's degree, 35.
Yeah.
Okay. And you got to be good, though.
What do teachers make?
Well, you know, they just gave us a raise. Yeah, I'm up to, I was at 17 cents an hour for a long time. Now I'm up to 18 and a half cents an hour. I'm really excited. Okay, so the statement of cash flows now, let's get back on track here. The statement of cash flows is showing us where the money went. What happened with our checkbook? The income statement showed us what the IRS wanted to see. And the statement of cash flows allows us to add in the money that didn't go out the door into our check and was in our checkbook, and then take the money out of our checkbook that had to go out for things that weren't allowed to be expensed in 1 year. So you'll see capital expenditure. See, $1.2 billion. They made a serious expenditure in new equipment and whatever, and that cost $1.2 billion. But they can't write that off in 1 year. They have to depreciate that over 20, 30 years, 5 years, depending on computers, 3 years, cars, 5 years. Are you with me? So that's the accounting. And the more you know about accounting, the better you're going to be able to make decisions accordingly. And so it turns out that last year, their checkbook rose by an extra $800 million. That's the bottom line in the cash flow, statement of cash flows. And that's why the accountants in the 121 class, the financial planning and money management class, we call the income statement, we call it a cash flow statement. And the accountants cringe, you know. They just want to slap us. But hey, we're personal finance people. What do you want? We call it a cash flow statement. So now, where does this stuff come from? When you are a publicly traded company, you now have a fiduciary. Like that word, fiduciary? You now have the duty to report this stuff every quarter in your 10-K and every year in your 10-K. And it used to be that some of the analysts on Wall Street would have advanced knowledge of what's coming out. And that changed in the 1990s, mostly because of technology. They said, look, we have the technology now, using the Infernal Net, that we can shoot this information out simultaneously to everybody around the world using this system called EDGAR, that's Securities and Exchange Commission, and it's called Regulation Fair Deal, Fair Disclosure, FD. So now what they do is they will announce, okay, we're going to have an earnings call March 18th, 2014, either before the market opens or after the market closes, and then they will go online and announce to the world what's going on at the same time this stuff is shot out to the internet. And that's what I wanted you to do in Chapter 5. I wanted you to listen or read a few of these. And the first 15, 20 minutes are usually pretty interesting. Not always. Remember, the company's trying to put its best face forward. And then they open it up to questions, and that's when it gets really stupid. Because people start asking really stupid questions. Some people ask very good questions, but some people ask really stupid questions. Well, if it's Tuesday, and a meteorite hits, and at the same time there's an outbreak of Ebola, and you know, Russia invades Santee, what's going to happen to your earnings? They don't show all the questions when you read it. Okay, well, if you listen to it, you'll get the questions, and you go, shut up. You know, because anybody can ask a question. So how many people actually enjoyed this Chapter 5 assignment? Anybody? Wanna, you did? You like it? You like the info? I like it. Especially the companies that I'm interested in. What? On the nose. That's exactly what Peter Lynch will tell you. He says, look, I got my best ideas listening to somebody else talk about their competitors, and then I investigated their competitors, and I found that this is a much better deal. So, yeah, you learn. This is the best part about investing. You will never learn everything, folks. There's no way any one human being can. There's no way that you can learn everything about all the publicly traded companies that are out there. You know, you can only hope to find, you know, become an expert in one or two or three of the fields. So that's why I love it so much, because I love learning new stuff. I'm sorry, say that again? Right, that's what capitalism is all about. If you can build a better mousetrap, the mice get smarter. If you can beat a path to your door, that's the idea. That's the idea. Now, how it works in real life, you know, even if you technologically come out with something better, does that mean you're going to win in the marketplace? Look at Microsoft. Okay, financial ratios. The relationship between two financial quantities expresses the quotient of one divided by the other. And then the ratio analysis, the study of the relationships between financial statement accountings. Now, we've already done a little bit of ratio analysis. We've already looked at the price-to-earnings ratio, dividend yield, dividend payout ratio. So some of this is going to be review. And we must recall that there is no one ratio that can accurately sum up the overall general state of a company. Each ratio must be considered in the context of all the other information that you've gathered. Plus, you must consider any ratio in the context of the industry the company exists with. So we'll take an example in a bit. And so here are the common stocks ratios. And these are all review. We've already taken a look, except for the PEG ratio. Right, the PEG. We've already taken a look at all of these. Book value per share, dividend payout ratio. So we're going to run through this fairly quickly. The price-to-earnings ratio. Are you starting to get a feel for PE? PE is high. Doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad deal. It could be a good deal, but it means it's riskier. PE low doesn't necessarily mean it's a darn good deal, a good value. It could be low for a reason. Historically, PE ratios were in the 5 to 12 range for mature companies, 14 to 20 range for growing companies. Greater than 20 was unusual. Today, it is commonplace for things to be greater than 20. And it also tells you how long it will take in years, assuming no changes in earnings, and they're changing all the time, for the company to earn back its price. A PE of 3 years. A PE of 20, 20 years. So here are six different companies. I think you know all these. ConocoPhillips, that's 76. That's the gas station, 76. That's a big oil company. Amgen, they're a biotech, very big biotech company, make a lot of drugs and other tests. Kellogg's, Google, J.P. Morgan, Chase, and Merck's a drug company. Merck's a drug company. So you look at these and you go, Conoco 9, Google 32, Amgen 18, J.P. Morgan 13, Kellogg's 12, and Merck 39. Well, what we need to do is look at their competitors. We need to just say, look, it doesn't make sense. Does it make sense to compare ConocoPhillips with Google? No, it makes sense to compare ConocoPhillips with Chevron and Mobil and BP. And when you do that, you say, oh, they're all fairly low. In fact, BP, that's pretty darn low. People are still pissed off at BP for that oil spill and still worried about how much money they're going to have to pay because of that. That was 2010. And so, are investors really excited about the prospects for the oil companies?
Nope.
Not really, are they? And are the oil companies going to be around in 50 years?
Probably.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. In fact, we're going to be, you know, hopefully we'll use less per capita, but at the same time, we're going to be using more oil because there's more and more people around the world who want what we have. They're tired of taking cold showers in the dark. Now, taking a look at the tech companies. Are Yahoo and Google really competitors? I don't think of them as competitors, but look, they both command a pretty good PE. Who's Baidu? Who's Sina? These are the Yahoos and Googles in China. And so are investors excited about Sina's prospects?
Yep.
Now what? Oh yeah, apparently. Are they right? We'll see in 3 to 5 years. So what does this tell us? To me, it's like a little red flag. Meaning either danger or, you know, we got to do a little bit more research. What's going on here before we invested in a Google or a Yahoo? Let's see what's going on in China with Baidu and Sina. All right, Google, I don't know if it was a good deal. They moved out of China a few years ago, right? Mm-hmm. And haven't come back. They just decided we're leaving China.
Wow.
When the Chinese hacked into their system, and then they keep them when they have this, it's called the Great Firewall of China. Whenever you type in, if you're in China and you type in a certain thing, they just say, nope, you're not going to be able to look at that. Sorry. And so Google was tired of filtering all their searches. So what they did, they knew it was going to happen. They routed everything through their Hong Kong server. And as soon as they did that, the Chinese shut them down. So they didn't actually leave China. They were kicked out, but they actually left. And so, for a few hours, everybody in China was able to see everything they wanted to see. and then they weren't. Because if you don't play by Chinese rules, they just shut you down. Amgen. Biotech. Biogen IDEC. This used to be based in San Diego. Now it's based in Massachusetts. Celgene, alumina. Is that something you want to take a look at? That's higher than Farce books. PE. So obviously there's something going on here. Investors are really excited about alumina. Does it mean that they're going to go anywhere? Does it mean they're going to be the next big thing? Could be. It just tells us we got to do some more research. Food companies. Actually, people are kind of excited about Hormel. What does Hormel make? Chili. Spam! If I were running Hormel, I would have an email campaign that I'd say, this is spam, you know, because spam is something you don't normally want in your email box, right? But this is something you want because we'll give you a little coupon for spam. That's, what is that stuff anyway? It's like sausage is what's left over, right?
Yeah.
It's salted, sweetened, and what's left over after everything, they pick up everything. It's a low-grade pâté. Now, I've seen this. You ever seen this book called The White Trash Cookbook? I just laughed and laughed. And they had rack of spam. Okay, fine. The banks? Yeah, the banks. And then the well, wait a minute. What's going on here? Merck and Bristol-Myers are pretty darn excited. Or investors are excited about them. But not so much Pfizer and Eli Lilly. What does Pfizer make? You know?
Drugs.
They all make drugs. They make antidepressants. Lipitor is their big one. Lipitor, and it's going off patent, and so people are worried. They also make Viagra. Have you heard? There's great Viagra jokes. Did you hear that there was a shipment of Viagra stolen? Huge shipment, yeah. The police are looking for a gang of hardened criminals. Okay, fine. So you get the feel that how can this help us? And this is true for all these ratios we're going to take a look at. When you see a ratio that is way out of touch with the rest of its competitors, It's like a little red flag waving, saying, "Come, I got more research to do." And it doesn't mean we should make the decision to buy on that. And it doesn't mean we should not make the decision to buy. It just means we have to add that to our mix of research. Make sense? Okay, let's continue. How can we account for the wide PE disparity between different industries and different companies within industries? Again, it is the expectation of future earnings and dividend growth by investors. And there have been other times, in 1960s was one of them, where some companies had huge PE ratios, and people just said, what's going on here? Well, this is a guy, Jack Dreyfus. You might have heard of Dreyfus Funds. They're a big mutual fund company. He's passed away now. But this is from The Random Walk Down Wall Street, which is a wonderful book that you want to read eventually. Take a nice little company that's been making shoelaces for 40 years and sells at a respectable 6x earnings ratio. Change the name from Shoelaces Incorporated to Electronics and Silicon Firth Burners. In today's market, the words electronics and silicon are worth 15x earnings. However, the real play comes from the word Firth Burner, which nobody understands. A word that no one understands entitles you to double your score. Therefore, we have 6x earnings for the shoelace business and 15x earnings for electronics and silicon, or a total of 21x earnings. Multiply this by 2 for the Firth Burners, and we now have a score of 42x earnings for the new company. Cute? You see what I'm saying? No, you can't account for it. It's just investors' insanity. Today, what you do is you replace Firth Burners with 3D printing and nanotechnology that nobody understands what it is, and replace electronics and silicon with social networking in China, and you get a high PE company like Sina. Make sense? Nod your head yes? Or okay. So does anybody really know what nanotechnology means? I kind of know what it means.
Microscopic.
Yeah, more than microscopic. Nanoscopic, which means billionths of inches, or whatever it is, billionths of meters, and these little bitty things that we don't even know what they're doing, but they're in your clothes by now. If you have the kind of clothes that you could pour wine on and it just beads right off, yeah, that's nanotechnology. That's nanotechnology at work. And there was a company called Nanotech here in San Diego, and their stock price just started going up. And nobody understood why. And it was because there were a bunch of, they figured it was because there were a bunch of articles about nanotechnology. And so people thought, oh, it's a new thing. And here's a company called Nanotech. I'll buy it. Or how about the Twitter company? Have you heard what happened with Twitter? Tweeter, right. There used to be an electronics company called Tweeter. Electronics store, remember? What's the other one?
Yeah,
Tweeter, right, yeah. Tweeter. And they're out of business now. Yeah. So the stock is worth nothing. It's a penny stock that's
fallen. Before
they were buying it because the symbol looked like Twitter, but it was Tweeter, but they bought it, and then they said, okay, we'll change it. They changed the symbol to something that didn't make any sense. Okay, so now what we're going to do is we're going to review the ratios that we've already gone through. But here's one that we haven't taken a look at, and that's called the PEG ratio. And the PEG ratio is simply to compare the PE ratio with the growth rate. Because the idea is the PE ratio should be equal to the growth rate. That's the idea. It doesn't always work that way. So if the PEG ratio is 1, it means that the growth rate, the PE ratio and the growth rate are the same. If it's greater than 1, that means the PE ratio is greater than the growth rate. And if it's less than 1, it's less than the growth rate. Does that make sense? You'll hear people talk about the, oh, look at that PEG ratio. Oh, it's outrageous. And it's just saying that the PE ratio is high. That's the idea behind that one. And then dividends per share. We already discussed dividends per share. We don't have to calculate it. It's already done for us. We just look it up. Number, the annual dividend paid to stockholders divided by the number of shares outstanding. Dividends became taboo in the 1990s, but now dividends have changed. People have changed their minds. They can be discussed in polite company again. The dividend yield, you calculated it in the assignment, in the exam. The dividends per share divided by the market price. This important statistic allows an investor to compare a company to all other forms of investments that pay dividends, that pay income, such as savings accounts, bonds, we'll get to in a couple weeks. Traditionally, 4-6 was good. S&P 500 is yielding a little bit over 2%. But hey, the 10-year Treasury bond is yielding around 2.5%. And savings accounts are yielding 0.1% if you're lucky. Some stocks are paying much more, while many growth stocks are not paying any dividends. The dividend payout ratio, we discussed that. You did it on the exam. Dividends per share divided by earnings per share. Mature companies often pay out almost all their earnings in dividends. Growth companies retain their earnings, called retained earnings, to support the growth of the company. And then book value per share. Some of you had a little hard time finding this. It was on the key statistics part of Yahoo. Okay, there you go. Take that. If the assets of the company are liquidated, how much would each shareholder receive? Now, it's theoretical because often the assets, if you actually tried to sell them, just as if you had a yard sale and tried to sell all your stuff, would you actually get what you think it's worth? Same thing is true here. If the company's actual market price is below the book value per share, the company is in danger of being dissolved. It's common for the market price to be far above the book value. Price to book value, you take the market price divided by the book value, and that's where it shows us, you know, what is it, if it's 1, they're equal. And normally it's greater than 1. Hey, it's 3 or 4. The company's worth 3 times more, according to investors, than what's on the book. And so 3 to 4 is not uncommon. At the bottom of the market downturn in 2008, 2009, it hit 1.8 overall. So people still believe that the stocks were worth more than their book value. But that's low by today's standards. 3 or 4 is typical. And then we discuss price to cash flow, current price divided by the current cash flow per share, several reasons why cash flow is different from earnings, depreciation. During the internet mania, many companies were reporting record earnings. At the same time, their cash flow was negative. How could that be? Well, they really weren't receiving the earnings in cash. They were receiving the earnings in promises to pay the money into the future, and those companies went out of business. And then price to sales. This is all review, right? Nod your head, yes? Okay, good. Am I going too fast, Adriana? Adriana's looking at me like, ooh. Okay, good. Price to sales. During the internet mania, many analysts use price to sales instead of price to earnings, since most of all the new earnings never generated any money. So, hey. Those were those. Okay, so that's all review. Got it? Okay, how are we going with time? Not bad. Get your calculators out, because now we're going to actually do some other calculations. Okay, so the profitability. And by the way, on the front, okay, so you're going to need this handout I just gave you. On the front are all these ratios. And then we're going to use the balance sheet and the income statement. We don't really use, for any of these, the cash flow statement. So we're going to need to be bouncing back and forth between the two. And the profitability ratios. Okay, everybody got a chance to see the spreadsheet? Anybody come in a little bit late, not see the spreadsheet? Okay, but you guys didn't take it. Yeah. Andrea. You saw it already? Okay. Okay, so the profitability ratios are financial ratios. We should be able to get through these today, and maybe a few others. These are financial ratios that measure a firm's returns by relating profits to sales, assets, or equity. So the net profit ratio, net profit margin, gross margin, operating margin, return on assets, and return on equity, also called return on investments. And I really should add, that. I keep meaning to do that. Warren Buffett has his own one. He calls return on invested capital. It's the same idea. So let's take a look at net profit margin. The net profit margin is the rate of profit being earned from earnings after expenses and taxes. So we take our net income and divide it by our total revenue. These are on the income statement. So what we're doing here, and this is the one that you'll hear people talk about often, we're taking the bottom line number and we're dividing it by the top line number. So net profit margin is equal to the net income, what we reported to the IRS, divided by total revenue. So can you find the bottom line number, net income? What is it? 450. Now, do you need to add the extra three zeros? No, just ignore them. The first four numbers are the first. Forget the last three zeros. And then, can you find the top line number? 72,217. Yeah, you can put the zeros in there if you want. So what we're doing is we're computing what is our margin. What did we make as a percentage of our revenue that came in the door. And what number do you get? 3.4%. And you can leave it that way or you can round it to percentage. At least two digits, maybe three digits of accuracy. Is that good? Oh, no. What we have to do is we have to take a look at that, and who else do we need to look at? Who are the competitors to Walgreens? CVS and Rong Aid. Rite Aid, I'm sorry. I have a friend who doesn't work there anymore, but he used to work at the corporate headquarters in Harrisburg, and he used to say, I don't know how the hell we're still in business. Ice cream, thrifties, they bought thrifties. Right. One of the favorite, my wife and I live in Ocean Beach, and one of our favorite things to do is on a Saturday night go down to the Rite Aid in OB, because you see the most wildest parade of people when you go down there. Just get an ice cream. Okay, so, but wait a minute. Are they the only competitors to Walgreens? Who else has got their hands in the cookie jar? Walmart and Costco and Target. And now does Devon still do it? No, they don't have pharmacies. Some of the pharmacies. So drugs are sad. You think, marijuana has a high margin. You make a lot of money off of illegal drugs. Everybody wants to get in the act. So we have to take a look at some of their other competitors too. So we would look at that. Now, if we go to Yahoo, where's Yahoo? Come on. Okay. Why isn't this? This is what's going on. I I do the updates on my XP machine, and what's happened is it doesn't work anymore. The alternate, it works, but it sometimes doesn't. When you flip, it doesn't make the flip. You notice what I was just doing? I was flipping and it didn't flip. You had to keep doing it, and every once in a while. So I think they put that bug into XP, but this is a Windows 7 machine, isn't it? It's a Windows 7 machine. So let's take a look at Walgreens. And what? I just said I want to look up Walgreens. Excuse me. Look up. Oof. Okay. So here's the summary page, and some of you got to the key statistics page for your book value. Let's go to the key statistics page, and we see that they report the profit margin. This is it, the net profit margin. And wait a minute. We computed 3.39, and they're doing 3.73. How come Yahoo's is different? Well, you got to look at this little thing right here. See that TTM? Stands for trailing 12 months. It turns out that we're looking at August 31st, 2013 data. We're looking at the annual data. Since then, if you go over here to the income statement, you'll see that that's what pops up by default is the annual data. But we can also take a look at the quarterly date. Come on, sweetheart. Thank you very much. And what they did is they went back from November 30th for quarters and recalculated that. Does that make sense? But is it really that different? 3.4, 3.7? It's pretty darn close. You wouldn't expect a big difference quarter to quarter in a company like Walgreens because, you know, what is it? It's a drugstore. Make sense? Okay, good. All right, where are we? Back here. All right, now, the next one is the gross margin. And the gross margin is basically the same idea. You want to compute it? How are we doing for time? Yeah, we got enough time to do it. Gross margin equals the gross profit. That's our profit after we have subtracted the cost of goods sold. And again, we relate that to the top line number. So, did you see the gross profit on the income statement? What number do you get?
21.119.
Okay. And we relate that gross profit to the total revenue. And what number do you get? 29%? 0.29? 2924. So approximately 29.2%. Questions? Is this that hard?
Yeah.
No, this is pretty... After chapter 6, this is easy, right? This is easy to do these ratios. And as we said, many of them are done for us. Gross profit, no. If we go back to Yahoo, you'll see they didn't just report it. Other places would report it. Is it good? We don't know without relating it to the competitors. Exactly. It varies greatly from industry to industry and competitor to competitor. The next one is operating margin. Same idea. We're going down the income statement. On operating margin, we compute the operating profit, and this is after you take out the overhead. It's sometimes called SG&O, S-A-N-O, S-A-N-G, and divide that by the total revenue. And so what's their operating profit?
Two.
What number do you got?
Two.
What? No, what's the number? We're operating profit. What's operating profit? 3,940. And again, divided by the top line number. And what's that, about 7%? 0.05. 4. 5. So 4.45%. And again, if we go back to Yahoo, we go, now watch, see if it does it again. I'm going to go to the, it did it that time. And if we go to their key statistics, we'll see that it's changed a little bit. It's 5.2% here. So it's Very similar, very similar. And then there's a return on assets, return on equity. We'll take a look at in just a minute. Okay, you guessed it. The higher the better. Varies greatly from industry to industry. When looking at a specific company, we always need to look at its competitors within the industry. When we find a company that is atypical of its competitors in the industry, it is a signal that we have more investigative work to do. It is not necessarily a signal that we shouldn't buy, that we should buy. But we just need to do more work. I like to think of it like a stew. I don't know if that's a good analogy. Like a stew, putting all these stuff in. That's a horrible analogy. Forget it. Okay, return on assets and return on equity. Now we're going to do the exact same thing, but instead of relating our profit to our income, we're going to relate it to assets on the balance sheet. So we take the net income, how much did we make, and we divide it by our total assets. So now we go back to the income statement for the net income, and that's this number right here, 2450. Everybody see that? And now we go to total assets. That's on the balance sheet. And what is it, 25 or something like that? 35,481,000. And we divide that and get 0.0691, so 6.91%, about 7%. Is that good? Look at its competitors, see what you think. And then the next one is return on equity, which is a little different here, folks, because here we related the income to the assets, but here what we're doing is now we're relating our net income to what we own of the company. The total assets includes debt. It includes what we owe, but that's equal to the debt and the liabilities. I'm sorry, the debt, liabilities, and the equity. Here, we're just comparing it to the total stockholders' equity. I know accounting is pretty boring, isn't it? Yeah, accounting. It's boring, but hey, you want to start at $45,000 a year? I don't know. It's not bad. Yeah, I wouldn't mind that. And so what's our net income again? 2450. But now, did you find total stockholder equity? 19. 454. And what do we get? 12.6%. And if we run back to Joe. Well, we're just saying, okay. Look, return on assets for Walgreens is 6.9%, and you go look at CVS, it's 7.2%, and you look at Rite Aid, it's 1.3%, and you go, well, hey, Rite Aid's certainly not doing as well as its competitors, is it? Maybe we want to stay away from that, but maybe we want to buy both CVS and Walgreens, and then we run the dividend discount models. We run the price ratio models. And then after we've done all our research, what do we do with all the numbers? Throw them away. And then ask ourselves, would we really want to own Walgreens? Would we really want to own CVS? Or maybe we're worried about Walmart taking over their entire... I don't think that's going to happen. I'm really, actually, CVS and Walgreens seem to be two really well-run companies, folks. Walmart sucks with prescriptions? They do? I don't know. Costco, I've had good...
Like CVS and them, a lot of things through the town, it's like women's makeup.
Right, and CVS just announced somebody... They're going to stop selling cigarettes. Not why? Because first of all, image, right, that's the big one. But secondly, what they're not telling you is that Philip Morris has been putting the screws to people. And they've been telling their vendors, you're going to sell it for this price. And if you don't, we're going to raise the price for you. So if you don't sell at this price, we're going to raise the price for you. And 7-Eleven, you ever hear them? They said, they just said, fine, you go right ahead and raise the price, we will sell fewer cigarettes. That is fine with us. And you notice now at 7-Eleven they have, what are they selling now? Fresh fruit? They're selling fresh food. They're selling pizza. Have you noticed them? 7-Eleven has said, fine, you know, we'll change. We're not afraid to change. So they realize that the writing's on the wall. They're not going to make as much money from cigarettes as Philip Morris is. Maybe Philip Morris will blink. I doubt it. That company doesn't care. They know their people are addicted to the damn stuff. They don't care. So, are you learning something?
Yes.
Okay, when we come... What?
So much division,
right. When we come back, we will finish up chapter 17 ratio analysis and hopefully get started on chapter 7. I'm not sure. But we're doing great. Yeah. Keep studying chapter 5. So much